your very best shot, and may the best team win. The time is now, the name of the game is action.
Tim Gallagher, basketball historian, joins the Bullseye again. Tim, thanks for jumping on. Obviously, in these turbulent times for the beloved Bull, I can't recall seeing something like this, especially with Rondo's Instagram post. Love to get your thoughts on the last few days. Let's start with the Atlanta loss, having a 10-point lead with 3 minutes left and blowing that. Let's start it from there, and let's get your thoughts on the unfortunate experiences of the last few days.
You're right. Turbulent is a good word to describe it. And on the last podcast, we talked about the Bulls' very average performance up to this point of the season, and talked about some of those gut punch losses, like to Minnesota with Tibbs, and a similar blown lead to what we saw with the Hawks, and losing the games to the Knicks because Rose and Noah are there. So not only a loss, but just a salt in the wound kind of loss. Well, this loss to the Hawks the other night, same kind of thing, right? They could have a chance to move over 500 on that same night. The Cavs, Raptors, Bucks, Hornets all lose, so teams ahead of them where they could maybe gain a little ground. So just the way they lost and then the circumstances, obviously they can't control how other teams do, but looking at the standings and, those last couple of playoff spots in the East are still very up for grabs, and the Bulls still hold one of them, believe it or not, despite all the turbulence and discord that's going on. They're still a playoff team. It's not a total disaster, but a couple of observations of that Hawks game. The one thing watching the game, and I'm not sure if it was late in the third quarter or maybe early in the fourth when Nico threw that casual cross-court pass to Rondo, that resulted in an over and back violation. And when I saw that play happen, I got that pit in my stomach that, there's an intuition here that this is not good. That they just weren't focused. They just were too casual. The way they've blown leads like this, even at home, you just have to be ultra in tune with execution and closing out the game. And so that play, as minimal as it seems probably to a lot of viewers, just said a lot to me. And so from there, a couple other disappointments were just shot selection. And, when you've got Jimmy going for 40 and Wade for 33, why Taj and Zipser are taking shots at all, other than a putback at the rim, but taking threes and missing threes. And it's one of those kind of things that, if they take it, you got to make it, right? It's like, if you're coming down on a fast break and throw behind the back pass, it's got to work. There's no margin for error there, right? And so I just thought that shot selection was very disturbing based on, what those players' roles are. And the guys you have on the floor, you got your closers and Jimmy and Wade, and both having great nights offensively to boot. So that there wasn't a better recognition either from the coaching staff or the players on the floor about who needed to have the ball when to close things out. And then and just that Coach Hoiberg didn't do a better job of kind of stopping the Hawks' runs. There were some runs throughout the game, and the Bulls answered most of them. But I just can't believe Popovich would let a lead slip away like that, right? He'd have a sense, an intuition of maybe it'd be after just one basket, right? Of a Tim Hardaway driving to the basket for a dunk, regardless of the score, I'm calling a timeout and saying, this is not acceptable. This is not what we're about. This can't happen at any time of the game, right?
And I've
been to Spurs games where I've seen that happen.
What I find disturbing is after the game, he said with the 10-point lead, it was a TV timeout, he brings the players over and he says, whatever you do, you got to run them off the three-point line. You can't let them have three-point shot. And the team listened to him so well that they gave up three straight three-pointers. It was like, it's kind of like, I understand he gave the right direction, but the team's obviously not buying into what you're saying. They're not listening to you. And that was... if you go back and watch those three three-pointers, Jimmy, or for the most part, it was either Dwayne or Jimmy's responsibility. That's why I had a little bit of a problem with their comments after the game, you know, and in that, you know, hey, they were partly at fault for losing that game. I know they played fantastic offensively. We wouldn't have even been in the game. And I know they were probably frustrated and let some of that come out. But look in the mirror first a little bit there, because that lead, losing that lead was partly their responsibility.
Right. And one other thing, maybe you can clear this up for me, and really other than that missed three, he's played okay, but how did Zipser somehow get into the rotation from kind of being a DNP and then a little time in the D League and now kind of a key guy and on the floor in a closeout attempt against one of your...
That's a great question. I mean, I saw him play for Windy City about, was it 3 weeks ago? Three weeks ago, this guy was playing on their developmental team in Hoffman State, starting. And watching him up close there, I was six rows up, I was saying to myself and telling my friends, this guy doesn't have the lateral quickness to play in an NBA. You know, he had three-point range. He had a couple threes in the game. But he wasn't dominating developmental league basketball. And he goes all of a sudden within a week from that to... being a core member of the rotation, you know, a rotation player, a starter. It's insanity. And I know Fred, some of his comments to the effect that, well, I want to have McDermott coming off the bench, you know, and some other comments like that. Come on, man. You know, I mean, really? McDermott should be starting. There shouldn't be any question here. If Paul Zipser should not be starting ahead of McDermott. I mean, what is wrong with this picture? I don't care if you want him coming off the bench. Have Zipser come off the bench. You know, what do you feel about that?
Well, I agree. And I'm fine with Zipser playing ahead of Nico. But I don't know if I missed something or there was some leap of improvement with Zipser that I somehow have overlooked. And I think he can play in the league and eventually. But just to me, this kind of all came out of nowhere. And then that he's... I just don't know that he'd earned the right to be on the floor at that time when you've got a must. You know, I saw that as a must-win home game against Atlanta.
Oh, absolutely. I think what he does bring a little bit is some shooting. I think he's clearly a better shooter from three-point range. I don't think it's reflected in the stats, but I think probably what they saw in practice, what I noticed in that Windy City game, he does have three-point range. And he's starving for shooting so bad that that's maybe what he was looking for. But I made this point on Waddle and Sylvie, and then in another cast I just did with Mark, Nico's shooting 30.4% from three. That is just beyond awful. And he's leading your team in attempts. You know, and my general point on Nico is at some point you can't let him shoot anymore. You can't have a guy firing up three-pointers at that kind of rate because that will absolutely kill your team. And Nico is at the point now where if you're shooting 30.4%, I don't think you can allow him to shoot threes. Like, I think you need to prevent him from shooting threes by benching him, setting him to Windy City, trading him, you know, doing whatever. But you can't have a guy firing up shots at that rate. You just can't, you know?
Right. And my points on Zipser are not that this guy shouldn't even have an NBA uniform. I think he's a competent player. I'm just saying this is a little too much too soon for my liking for – you know, where
absolutely
he is in his development. So I don't want to say that Zipser doesn't have potential to play in the league or be a contributor at some level. But, the other funny thing about it, though, is this. Let's say the Bulls do beat the Hawks, and now they're a game over 500, and even if maybe it was a little sloppy finish, they still would have won the game and be a game over 500, and then this whole crap storm doesn't happen. Right, so it's just amazing how just a little turn of events can really set off a firestorm with Wade and Jimmy going public with their concern. Which, again,
What did you think of that? Let's start out with Wade's comments and Jimmy's. I mean, what was your opinion when you heard them? And did you feel that was the right thing to do?
Well, I totally understand their frustration. Heck, think how frustrated you and I are just from watching it.
right.
So they're living it. This is their livelihood. And And I understand there's going to be that level of frustration, but I thought a guy of Wade's stature in the league that having these kind of incidents with the media, you know, he was way past that, right? He'd be the locker room lawyer, right? He would settle things behind closed doors. I could see him speaking maybe in more general terms about disappointing and we got to close out better, but kind of pointing some fingers. You know, I had an issue with the level that he took it. And then,
really quick, though, Tim, did you hear the entire interview? Did you just hear a cut, or did you read it?
I read it.
Okay.
I haven't heard the audio.
I did. And I will say, in Wade's defense, if you sit back and listen to the context, the tone of the entire thing, I was left with a different feeling. I didn't think it was as harsh as it reads, if that makes any sense.
I thought
Jimmy's was a lot more harsh. But I think in general what he was trying to convey was, hey, guys, you know, this has got to hurt. This has got to make you want it more. Losing a game like that has got to suck. And, you know, I've got three titles, and I shouldn't be more hurt than you. I didn't take it as much. I didn't think it was as negative as it was from Jimmy. Just my opinion.
Right. Well, and I can understand that. And I didn't say anything that either one of them said was untrue. I agree with it. It's just, but how do you handle your business?
Well, I do think it's untrue to say questioning the work ethic. Like, I have never read anything. In fact, I've just heard the opposite, that for the most part, the guys in that team, including Nico, have an excellent work ethic. And they're putting in the effort to get better. It's not translating, right? For whatever reason, Nico sucks. He's just not shooting the ball or playing well. But he is putting in the effort and staying longer and practicing. And I think that's why Rondo responded so angrily in that he sees these guys putting in the effort of practice. Wade's at an age where he's sitting out practices, and that I think that's what caused an issue.
Right. Well, and just in this age of instant news and everything getting out there, and like you just mentioned in the example of Wade, the context of it too. I only read it. I didn't hear the tone of his voice, and a lot of that impacts the way the world communicates these days, right? And things do get misinterpreted. So, and it looks like from the latest things I've seen on the news wires that they, you know, seem to have, you know, cleared the air. I see Gar Forman came out and spoke about it. And so, you know, again, I still don't think this is, you know, let's blow up the team, because they are in the eighth spot in the East right now, which isn't, you know, anything to you know, throw a parade about. But, you know, as I think about the league in general, I mean, really, what teams are not a mess in one way or the other? When I say mess, I mean either there's some turmoil or dysfunction like Cleveland is going through right now. There's injuries like the Clippers with Griffin and Chris Paul out, or a team just has a mediocre record or is playing, you know, below expectations. And I'm thinking of teams like the Pistons, who were a playoff team last year, or Portland that was a playoff team. Or even a team like Minnesota, right, who with Tibbs in there, everybody thought, well, he's got this young talent, these guys are going to make a leap. So I think the only teams I really came up with that aren't a mess, using that kind of general term, are, you know, Golden State, the Spurs, the Celtics are on a pretty good upswing.
I'd say the Wizards are actually on a nice run, too.
Yep, I've got stay tuned here. So I've got the Warriors, Spurs, Celtics, Jazz, Memphis, the Wizards, and 76ers, right? So that's seven teams out of 30 that I think are in a good way right now.
Yeah.
And, you know, who
maybe
would have thought,
Heat. I think the Heat have won five in a row.
Yeah, so, you know, who would have thought the Sixers? So I think the Bulls, for better or for worse, are not alone in terms of teams just trying to find their way. And I think there's again, still some hope if they can somehow weather these storms, but just this inconsistency is just really disturbing. And, you know, again, a double digit lead against a team at home with Wade and Jimmy playing like that, it just there's no excuse to not win that game.
What did you think of Rondo's response?
Well, I guess if you're him, what do you got to lose, right? Just in terms of just speaking out, right? I think there was some sense to his comments about, you know, about, like you said, the team, the effort is there, and, you know, it was a little dicey, I think, calling out Wade, right, and referencing his time on the Celtics when, boy, Kevin Garnett or Paul Pierce wouldn't have done something like this. So, you know, that was a little bit of a dig, obviously. But I don't know. It's just there's so much drama. Right? You know, I'd rather they channel all this and just play better and execute at the end of games. And I think, like you said, I think the effort is there, but the players at this level need to execute. And I don't know if that's Hoiberg's fault or the leaders on the floor at the time kind of taking more charge of who's doing what. But you know, something's got to change because this losing its interest.
This is what I have to ask you. I mean, so look at this team right now. First question, how many more years do you think – it's a two-parter, and the first one I need to get your opinion on first. How many more years do you feel LeBron owns the East?
Well, you know, he's playing the most minutes in the league this year. You know, that I've always wondered, how are they acquiring these veterans and they're staying healthy? And so Birdman Anderson, not that he was going to be the guy that puts them over the hump to win, but, you know, he's out for the season. And so I think a lot of it, they've been kind of keeping it together with duct tape. Now, as I say that, obviously you've got LeBron, Kyrie, Kevin Love, Tristan Thompson's a very good player. So, I mean, there's some talented pieces there. But I'm still amazed, you know, that especially LeBron's able to keep it up. Now, this latest bit of dysfunction and turmoil that they're going through, you know, I guess if you look at history, I'm not going to count LeBron out until he's frustrated.
Out, right? They're going through a tough fit. You know, they're not playing well. It's just a small stretch. Every team has moments like this in a regular season. To me, it's nothing. And when the playoffs come, it's a team built for the playoffs.
Right. But I'd say there's maybe a two-year window, you know, maybe a year or two beyond this year, that, you know, if LeBron stays healthy and they have, you know,
I'd say it's a little longer than that, but I'd say it's minimum three, max five. But my general point is, even let's say it is two, and we both agree it's two, I don't care who you bring in to build around. If you're going to build around Jimmy, you're not winning a title in 3 years. You know, you're not going to get better. I don't care who it is you bring in. Unless it's Kevin Durant, that's not happening. Realistically, who are you going to bring in that's going to make you better than the Cavs in the next 3 years? It's not going to happen. So by that fact, don't you kind of have to trade him and just blow everything up and get a top 10 pick?
Well, that is one way to look at it. I agree with what you said. And, you know, and if the goal is beyond, and I know publicly they're going to say, well, we want to win championships. The Bulls have won six championships, and anything less than that is not acceptable. But, you know, but realistically, are they going to be a playoff team that could maybe get to a conference finals? You know, that's probably a more attainable and realistic goal short term. So, you know, I would say have Jimmy stay as one of the cornerstones to build around him. But, you know, again, I don't know what other assets they have that other teams would be jumping over or
yeah, but they don't. Like, that's the thing. Like, even if they got a top pick in the draft, who realistically are you going to draft who is within 3 years going to be providing you what Wade is providing you this year? Like, is there a guy – no one's going to come in and start immediately start going 20 points per game and, you know, doing the stuff that Wade does. That's my point with this whole thing, this concept that we can build around Jimmy. That's fine. I just don't see any way we win a title building around Jimmy because he's not going to be good enough in the next 3 years to win a title. And then after 3 years, he's going to be past his prime. It's like, don't we have to trade him? That if we want to win a title, the goal is winning a title, that's fair. The only other option I saw then is that you take this vet type of move and try to recreate the Celtics of, 2008 and try to bring in vets like that are free agents and have Wade here and recruit and get better at the power forward position. Either a Blake Griffin next year or I don't know who, but, taking that route.
Right. Well, I agree with your positions. Are you asking me to pick one as a way to go?
I'd like to hear your opinion. What do you think is, I guess the question would be twofold. What do you think is more realistic? What do you predict the Bulls will do? And what would you do, Tim? That's what I'd like to know.
Right. I think it would be hard to trade Jimmy Butler. I think short term, I would not have Nico and Rondo on the roster after this season, and they may not be on the Rondo may not be on the roster after this weekend. But so I would definitely find a way to move those guys, and I would go for the attempt of seeing if Wade can recruit some help and try to make a run at it. And, again, you're kind of banking on LeBron either slipping a little bit or Cleveland not having enough firepower around him to win the East for the next 2 to 3 years. So I would, despite what happened with Wade going to the media, I think he's played well enough, and I think it's helped Jimmy's game enough that I would try to ride that wave a little longer. But there's some other people on that roster, like I mentioned with Rondo and Nico, that they're just not cutting it anymore.
No, agreed. What about Taj? Do you trade him before the trade deadline, or do you hold on to him? It's like he's such a key player. If you want to compete for a playoff spot, it's not like you have that wrapped up. It's a mess. It really is right now to me. You got to figure out what you're going to do, and if you're going to trade Taj for what, peanuts, then, we're in full rebuild.
Right. I don't know what if you get equal value for Taj, and he's been a cornerstone guy this year. I'd say Taj, Robin Lopez, and Jimmy, have been. And I'm only leaving Wade out just because he's not playing some games due to back-to-backs and things like that. But I think those guys have been cornerstones. I keep McDermott. We talked about some of the other young guys, though, have not really developed. I like what we've seen in Michael Carter Williams, but can he stay healthy and stay on the floor? That's a concern also. But if I had to pick a path, I'd say clean out some of the underperformers, even though they're veterans. Stick with Wade and see if he can help recruit a few guys and make a short-term run at it with Wade, Jimmy. Hopefully they can re-sign Taj, Robin Lopez, and then maybe pick up a few Blake Griffin-ish like veterans. I don't know how many guys are out there and what kind of leverage Wade's going to have to bring them in, but I would prefer that route.
I think it's
a pretty deep draft this year. So, even if the Bulls do get the last playoff spot, you could still get a decent player. Now, Denzel Valentine has not delivered anything this year, but you could get a pick of that range, and there could be some players there. Just from what I've seen, especially if all these underclassmen come out, that it looks like they will. I think there's going to be some talented players. But again, these are going to be supplemental guys, like you said. We've talked about it all the time. Even look at Minnesota with how great Karl Anthony Towns is, how great Wiggins is. And that team's still 10 games under 500, even with the mastermind Tibbs running the show.
No, exactly. Yeah, it's great. You got to have those glue guys. And most teams, that's why a guy like Taj Gibson, to me, is more valuable than you could get in return for him. It's like, what's the most some team's going to give up for Taj Gibson? Probably a late first-round pick, and I don't think, based on where late first-round picks, how often you get an ROI on it, it's not a lot. It's far less than most people think. So, I don't know. We're running a little low on time here, so I did want to get to a few more issues. Let's finish up the grades, and then I'd like to get your general opinion on, the NBA overall. We got a few more guys to go on midterm grades.
Sure. I think we only missed four guys from the last podcast from the Bulls roster, so we'll go through them really quickly. Actually, we already talked about Zipser, which before his emergence into the rotation, I had him as a C, and that was mainly because I hadn't seen enough of him to really make a good judgment. You know, he didn't play in summer league. I think he has some talent to be a contributor, but still too early to tell. And I am a little surprised he's gotten so many minutes lately ahead of some other players. Isaiah Cannon, I've given him a D, maybe a D minus. So he's fallen out of the rotation, and just I hoped best case he'd give us some bursts like an Aaron Brooks would. You know, maybe have a 12, 15 point quarter here and there, maybe even a 20 point game here and there. But he hasn't delivered on that. Felicio, even since we had the last podcast and I wrote this up, I had him as a C+, but I think I have to move that up to a B. I mean, I think he's looked really good lately, and
agreed. Yep.
And gives us some additional athleticism on the front line, and you know, he's still a young kid, right? He's still I think got a lot of upside, but I think his stock is really on the rise, and I've seen signs of it.
For a team that's sorely lacking in athleticism, he's been exactly what the doctor ordered. He's supplanted Portis, and rightly so. So,
yep.
Absolutely agree.
And then the final player I had was Denzel Valentine, and I actually gave him an incomplete just because I guess you could give him a failing grade, but I think due to injuries and even since training camp, he got hurt right away in training camp, and it just never has come together for him. And boy, if he was healthy and had been in the mix from the beginning, I really think they could use someone with his passing skills, his versatility. And so that's been a big disappointment that for various reasons it's just never happened for him this year. Maybe after second half of the season here that can turn a corner, or depending on the direction the Bulls take, they might feature him a little more and see if they can develop some of the young guys like him.
Yeah, and he's not getting a chance. I don't understand it. I think he's shown some serious signs in the minutes he's received. He had a great game against Washington at Washington. He's starting to hit the three with more consistency. At one time recently, he was 8 for 16, and then he just couldn't see the floor. It always seems like he'd get sick or get hurt or something would happen. It's just been a snake-bitten season so far. But I think he's healthy right now, and I have no idea why the guy can't see any minutes on the floor. It's driving me nuts. Or Verando, or even a Grant. I think I watched it, I really paid attention to him in warm-ups at the game I was at against Charlotte. And he can handle the ball. He really looks good, up close. Not as big as you think he is. I remember you mentioned that before. He looks more like a 6'4 size to me, but I don't see why he can't provide you some minutes at point. I don't think he's that awful defensively. And it's just beyond frustrating what they're doing with him. It's just, I don't get it whatsoever.
Right. Well, hopefully he'll get an opportunity. I mean, things are a little bit wide open with that. I know we need to wrap up here, so just kind of some final thoughts on, we talked about kind of the league as a whole when I just mentioned that how few teams are really kind of in a good way right now. You couldn't find some fault with what they're doing. But, and I did mention the Heat, and you talked about them. They won five in a row, and they, although, they're going to be in the lottery. They're not going to make the playoffs, but they are playing better as well. And again, some of these teams like Philly and at least Miami this year, and even Orlando in some degrees, where you could kind of just, chalk that down as a victory, that's not such an easy victory anymore. But essentially in the East, from my preseason predictions, it's kind of gone as I had predicted. I guess the team that played a little better than I thought they would was the Pacers, and the team that's played not up to my expectations was Detroit. I've got my breakout player in the Eastern Conference is Antetokounmpo, the Greek freak Giannis, is who we've talked about before. Although, again, even as good as he and Jabari Parker have looked at times, the Bucks are still three games under 500 and out of the playoffs if the season was to end today. So I think that shows you the importance of having a veteran leader, veteran players to help bring these young guys along, even though Jason Kidd, you know, seems to be developing them. And then my rookie of the year in the East, I've got Joel Embiid with the honorable mention to Malcolm Brogdon, who's played really well for Milwaukee for a guy that was a second-round pick. Is really contributing. And then finally in the West, I guess the teams I kind of misjudged, I thought the Blazers and Dallas would be better. Dallas has played better recently because they've been healthier. And I guess the teams that have surprised me, certainly Houston, I had as a playoff team, but that I didn't think they'd play as well as they are. And I guess Memphis has surprised me a bit as well in terms of how well they're doing with the coaching change and, and just some of the age that's starting to show on Tony Allen and Zach Randolph and some of those guys. But my breakout player in the West I have is Gordon Hayward from the Jazz. So the Jazz are 30-18, playing well, and Hayward's just kind of their go-to guy. You know, he's really versatile as a ball handler and someone that's got some size. So really excited with how he's improved this year. And then my West Rookie of the Year, I have Domantas Sabonis from Oklahoma City, who has been in the starting lineup most of this year for the Thunder. And with Cantor getting hurt, you see him punch the seat and break his arm.
Yeah, it's unbelievable. Yeah, so he walked right to the locker room. We realized he screwed it up. How dumb.
Well, I guess that gives Sabonis some additional playing time on the front line for OKC. So those are kind of my midseason observations for the league and conferences as a whole.
Tim, I can't thank you enough for jumping on the bullseye. All the best to you, brother. Have a great weekend, and looking forward to touching base next week. Hopefully things will look a bit brighter for the beloved Bulls.
Okay, Fred. Well, always a pleasure. Take care.